This is Undaunted Life, a man's podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Thompson. Let's get into it. In their case, the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. That is 2 Corinthians 4:4. Guys, as always, we start out with thank you. We are so thankful to you, our donors. If you wonder how we're able to pull off things like this show, it's because we have donors hooking us up on a monthly basis. We're so thankful for you guys again. Also want to remind you, I'll keep reminding you until it actually comes to pass, May the 17th, that is Friday, May the 17th, I will be live presenting at Church of 1122, their main campus, the San Pablo campus. That is at 14286 Beach Boulevard number 2 in Jacksonville. I will be presenting my Defeating Pro-Abortion Arguments talk. It starts at 7 o'clock. There's no food. There's no childcare. But again, this is an acceptable presentation, I guess. You know, I would say probably certainly 16 and above, but maybe even like 12, 13, 14 years old or above. But this is a presentation where I'm going to equip you to deal with the top 18 pro-abortion arguments. And we are in an election season, and we're in an election season where a lot of people are talking about the abortion topic. And so you do not want to miss that. Again, May the 17th at 7 o'clock, make sure you are there. And I want to give you a quick update on the Joby Martin book giveaway. You guys showed up like super big. Okay. So I had already recorded Tuesday and Thursday's podcast of last week. And I just did the Joby Martin book giveaway thing at the beginning of each one of those episodes. And within like less than 24 hours, all 65 of the books that I had basically had were accounted for by y'all's donations. And so you guys definitely showed up big, but I worked with Joby and his team. He's got a fantastic team over there, and I worked with Joby. And here's the thing, anyone that gave last week, so you gave at least a minimum of $30 donation, you gave to support not only Undaunted Life, but the Hope Pregnancy Center here in Central Oklahoma, we are going to get you a signed book from Joby Martin, okay? So give me just a little bit, okay? So just be patient with me. Even if you were one of the first people, like Tuesday morning at like 5 a.m., which is when our first donation came through, just be patient because we want to send all these out around the same time. And so we don't want to like be going back and forth to the, you know, post office a whole bunch of times. But I'm going to be getting some more books from Joby. We will get books out to you guys. And I think like the final total is still kind of coming in, and I'm recording this a few days before this comes out, but it's going to be over $5,000 total that we raised. And guys, I just got to tell you, any fees or any like, you know, shipping and all that stuff, that's going to come out of Undaunted Life's end. We want to do everything that we can to equip men to push back darkness. And we also want to push back the darkness and scourge that is the genocide happening to the unborn. And the way that we do that is by supporting things like the Hope Pregnancy Center in Central Oklahoma. And so thank you all so, so very much for donating. Again, we'll get you your books in the next few weeks. Just be patient with us. And thank you again to Joby Martin and his team. Because again, guys, like sitting there and like signing all these books, like it takes a lot of effort. And here we are like thinking 65 books would take a while to get, you know, get taken advantage of, or that sounds bad. But you get what I'm saying. Like these 65 books, I thought it might last a little bit, and it didn't even last a day. And his team is being so great and so generous to make sure that we get more books. And, you know, I was even just going to go buy a bunch more books, but then it was going to really affect the amount of donation that we were going to be able to give to the Hope Pregnancy Center. So I'm just so thankful for all of you in, you know, participating with that. With us. So here, let's move on to the quick hitters. These are the quick hitters I'm going to be covering today. The Biden administration nuking Title IX by making gender identity the same as sex. A leftist Christian activist supporting the anti-Semitic displays at Columbia University. The Biden administration quietly making it harder for the swamp to be drained. And an 18-year-old Idaho man being arrested before carrying out a suicide attack on Christian churches in order to support ISIS. Excuse me. But before we get into anything else, I do want to talk about a story. I've had a lot of people ask me to talk about this. I've done my own research and behind the scenes stuff to make sure that everything in this story is on the up and up. But I want to talk about what's going on currently with Ryan and Valerie Watson. So as of the recording of this, I'm recording this, you know, several days in advance. Some of these details are going to be updated. Their situation is going to potentially be updated, but it's making national news now, and for good reason. But the whole thing with a story like this is it makes the national news last week, but then you go into the weekend, you come into Monday, and now it's Tuesday, and you're like, okay, you forget about a story like this. But Ryan and Valerie Watson, they went on a group trip to celebrate their 40s, like everybody turning 40. They did a group trip to Turks and Caicos. So that is a British territory in the Caribbean. And so I'll speed the story up a little bit, and I'll just basically flow off the top of my head with the details. So the duffel bag that Ryan Watson traveled with is the same duffel bag that apparently he used during deer season. And so he had some loose, apparently there were four loose 6.5 Creedmoor rounds in his bag. So he makes it out of our country through TSA. They don't notice that the four rounds are there in his bag. He gets into Turks and Caicos, and they claim that they don't notice that the four rounds are there in his bag. So he's there for, you know, a week, and they're spending, you know, him and his crew are spending thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars, having a good trip. And then on their way out, right? So they're at Turks and Caicos. They're trying to fly back to the United States. Ryan and Valerie Watson are arrested because in the country, it's not a country, but in the territory of Turks and Caicos, it is, you can't have ammunition, right? And so I don't know what their stipulations are on weapons, but obviously if they're criminalizing ammunition, you can imagine what they are with weapons. And so they arrested them for possession of this ammunition. And the minimum sentence for this crime in Turks and Caicos is 12 years in prison. 12 years in prison. Now, the country, I keep calling it a country, Turks and Caicos, a territory, they didn't have to arrest Valerie Watson. They could have let her go on, get home to her family, get home to their young children, right? And by the way, this is a couple that live in my city, in Edmond, Oklahoma. I know a ton of people that know this couple. I do not know them personally, but I'm one degree of separation from them by like, you know, 150 different people. But they held her to put pressure on Ryan, who owned it from the very beginning. Yes, those are my rounds. That's my hunting bag. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean anything by it. I wasn't going to leave them. Like, I'm so sorry. But they held her in jail, thinking it would put pressure on Ryan, but they did eventually let Valerie go. And since this all kind of first started and went down, Ryan has been able to post bail, but he doesn't get another court appearance until June. And again, he stands to serve a minimum of 12 years in prison for a whoopsies, for a whoopsie daisies. Right. So I have spoken with people very close to the Watsons. We are working to get Ryan on the show to tell his story, to give his side, because he's doing these media appearances, but he's only getting like, you know, 90 seconds, maybe 3 minutes to kind of talk about their story. I think they've been on, you know, Fox News and the Today Show or some of these different shows and things like that. And they're going to be on more things like that. But he's not really having the opportunity to give a full-throated discussion of the story. At most, you'll get a news story where it's like, you know, the entire segment might be like 3 or 4 minutes. And so we want him to be able to give his side. You know, his attorneys are telling him, you know, not to make a big deal about this, but it's like, nah, screw that. We're going to make a big deal about this. We're going to scream this from the rooftops. And so I want to bring you as much information on that story as it comes in. Again, I'm recording this several days before this comes out, so by the time you're hearing this, the story could change entirely. I do have a link in this episode to a story that was done by NBC Boston. That was the first kind of larger media entity that did an exclusive story on this, and I also have a link to their GoFundMe page. Again, I have to be very careful with like GoFundMes and different things like that, because, you know, I link to one person's GoFundMe and then another person's like, oh, hey, my grandma's leg fell off. You want to, you know, support this GoFundMe? So please don't send me your GoFundMe stuff. This isn't going to be the GoFundMe podcast, but they are acquiring tens of thousands of dollars worth of, you know, bills, not only just legal bills, but some of the other different things that are going on in this situation. So we want to do what we can to point them out, or to help them out rather. But I do have some quick thoughts on this before we get to my main subject matter for today. A couple of quick thoughts, because a lot of things can be true at once. We can feel bad for these people, but my first thought is make sure you know what's in your luggage. I mean, that's on you, okay? And so if you've got, if you travel with ammunition or with firearms, you've got to be very, very careful. I had a member of my family who was in his 80s at the time that would use the same luggage that he would use for road trips to go on a flight to Hawaii, and he had a pistol there. And they treated my 80-something-year-old family member like he was a terrorist, right? But, you know, he had a loaded pistol, a revolver in his bag. You got to know what's in your luggage. Also, I really think that Americans need to stop going to other countries and expecting everyone there to adhere to American laws and American ways of doing things. You can think this is a really dumb law, and it is, but it's their law. They get to make their law. Like, do we take kindly when, you know, British people or Japanese people or Brazilian people or whatever come to this country and they're like, yeah, your laws are stupid. It's like, well, you're here. So either do the laws our way or go back, right? Like, you don't have to be here. And so Americans, like, because I've heard a lot of complaining around the story, like, oh, this is stupid. This isn't the way to do it. You know, he should have freedoms. Well, right. He has freedoms here, though. He's an American citizen, not a citizen of that territory. And again, ignorance of the law is no excuse. Right. So this sounds like I'm ragging on them. I'm not. I feel really, really bad for this family. I'm just giving all you guys a warning. You know, I talk to some guys that prepare people before they go over to really, really serious places. And, you know, hey, what should they have in mind for different travel advisories? And you can't just get someplace, break their law and be like, oh, well, I didn't know any better. Like, that doesn't fly here. That doesn't really fly anywhere. But to kind of shift a little bit, we need to realize that the TSA is an absolute joke. The fact that you have to sit in line at security and take your shoes off and take your belt out and, you know, take your laptop out of your bag and all that, it's ridiculous because the TSA is worthless. The TSA in America should have found those rounds before he even left. And guess what? I'm assuming they flew out of Oklahoma. It would have been no big deal. They would have just thrown the rounds away. No big deal. And there's been plenty of studies done where TSA is basically, tested, and they'll like literally put contraband in bags and see if the TSA will flag it, and they don't flag it. So the TSA is a joke. Also, here's something to all of you. Never, ever travel to Turks and Caicos. If you've got a family trip or a trip planned to Turks and Caicos right now, you cancel it. And you send off an email to the main government or the governor of whatever place where this couple was, and you tell them exactly the reason why. And the reason why I'm saying that is because over 90% of how Turks and Caicos stays a territory is because of tourism. They used to be like the salt capital of the world, or at least of the Caribbean, and they were, they were really, really well off. But now it's tourism. So if the tourism turns off because of a story like this, they're probably going to change this ridiculous law. So you can complain about the law, but it's probably not going to change unless you change. But if you do this thing, it's the same thing where people are like, I'm not going to shop at Target because, they're pro-transing the kids and Satanism and, having dudes in the women's bathrooms. And that lasts like a weekend. And then it's like, oh, but I really like the lipstick from Target. And so I'm going to go there. Or they really have the salsa. It's like, okay, you're either going to be about it or you're not going to be about it. Okay. And so in a situation like this, Turks and Caicos can suck a big fat one as far as I'm concerned. Okay, there are other places to go. Go to Hawaii. That's America. And when you're on the beach in Hawaii, you're not really going to know the difference between being there versus somewhere in the Caribbean. And the last thing that I want to talk about in terms of this before we get to the main subject matter is, guys, have you some friends willing to come get you if you're in a tough spot like this family is? Because let's just say, I'll pick my words carefully, I sent this story to some fairly serious dudes, and I was like, hey, if I'm ever in a situation like this, hopefully you remember how your nods work. And they basically, all of them were like, yeah, man, no factor. We got you. You got to make sure you have people like that in your life. This story was kind of a learning lesson for my wife and I, not really a learning lesson, but it was just a reminder for my wife that, hey, if we ever get into a pinch, here's the names of the people that it's going to be important for you to make sure that you connect with. Remember these names. I'm going to keep repeating these names because here's the list. Here are the movers. Here are the shakers. Here are the people that have the power of the pen, the power of the phone, and they can get some action done. Okay? And some of those people are working in this particular situation. And so if you don't have people like that in your life, spend some time getting after it. All right. We're going to move on to talking about Richard Dawkins. Okay. So Richard Dawkins is one of the most famous people on the planet for something that he doesn't believe. So typically people are famous for things that they do believe in. Richard Dawkins is famous for not believing in something, and that something is God. And so he is a very ardent atheist. He is, a world-renowned scientist as well. But the only reason anyone knows his name is not because of the work he's done in science, but it's because of the way that he attacks really any religion, but specifically Christianity. If that name sounds familiar, he's one of the four horsemen of modern atheism. So you've probably heard of Richard Dawkins, the scientist, Sam Harris, the scholar, you have Daniel Dennett, the philosopher, and then you have Christopher Hitchens, who I'm not sure what he did, but he just sounded smart because he was British. Now, Hitchens died in 2001, and Daniel Dennett actually just died on April the 19th. And so I guess neither one of those guys are atheists anymore. So they kind of effed around and found out, didn't they? So they spend their entire life telling people how ridiculous this is to believe in the spaghetti monster in the sky. And then they met him. And I don't think they had the right words to say whenever they met him. So there's still time for Dawkins and Harris. So I guess we can pray for Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins. But Richard Dawkins recently went on LBC, which is called Leading Britain's Conversation. It's just a show. And he did an interview with a gal named Rachel Johnson. And they were talking about Christmas and Easter, and really the overall role of Christianity in British life. Because if you know anything about what's happening in the UK and really in Europe at large, the people that are attending any type of service, like Christian service, is plummeting. People that hold to any type of a faith in Christ, that is absolutely plummeting. And so on this show, I can't forget how long the actual interview was, but there was a snippet where Richard Dawkins makes a stunning admission, and that went viral. So let's go to the clip here.
Well, I must say I was slightly horrified to hear that Ramadan is being promoted instead. I do think that we are culturally a Christian country. I call myself a cultural Christian. I'm not a believer. But there's a distinction between being a believing Christian and being a cultural Christian. And so, I love hymns and Christmas carols, and I sort of feel at home in the Christian ethos. I feel that we are a Christian country in that sense. It's true that statistically the number of people who actually believe in Christianity is going down, and I'm happy with that. But I would not be happy if, for example, we lost all our cathedrals and our beautiful parish churches. So I count myself a cultural Christian. I think it would matter if we, certainly if we substituted any alternative religion, that would be truly dreadful.
Well, which brings me to my supplementary point, which is that, as we know, church attendance is plummeting, but the erection of mosques across Europe, I think 6,000 are under construction, and there are many more, I mean, are being planned. So do you regard that as a problem? Do you think that matters?
Yes, I do really. I mean, I don't. I might choose my words carefully. I mean, if I had to choose between Christianity and Islam, I'd choose Christianity every single time. I mean, it seems to me to be a fundamentally decent religion, in a way that I think Islam is not.
I think you're going to have to explain why you say that, Professor Dawkins. Why is Islam
Well, the way
fundamentally not decent like Christianity?
Yes, I mean the way women are treated. I mean, Christianity is not great about that. It's had its problems with female vicars and female bishops and things. But there's an active hostility to women, which is promoted, I think, by the holy books of Islam. I'm not talking about individual Muslims, who of course are quite different. But the doctrines of Islam, the Hadith and the Quran, it's fundamentally hostile to women, hostile to gays. And I find that I like to live in a culturally Christian country, although I do not believe a single word of the Christian faith.
All right, we're going to break down all of that, but the viral quote is obviously this one. I do think that we are culturally a Christian country. I call myself a cultural Christian. I'm not a believer, but there's a distinction between being a believing Christian and a cultural Christian. So here's a couple of things about that quote. First thing is he's said before that he's a cultural Christian, and so there was kind of like a big tidal wave of Christians almost like claiming victory. But apparently there were articles back in the day where he called himself a cultural Christian, so I guess we can just say he's called himself that before. This wasn't the first time. He's probably wondering, like, why is everybody freaking out that I'm saying it now? Another thing about this particular quote is he's absolutely right. There is a large distinction between being a believing Christian and a cultural Christian. Because a cultural Christian are, it's kind of like what I was talking about last year when I talked about country music theology. These are people that culturally are Christian, right? So culturally, they would say, yeah, I believe in God. I believe in Jesus. I believe in the Bible. I go to church. You know, it's that I listen to country music. I vote Republican, you know, somewhat often. So I'm a Christian, right? I was born in Oklahoma, so I'm a Christian. It's that type of thing. That's cultural Christianity. Then there's believing Christianity, which is where you put your faith and the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross for the propitiation of your sin debt. That's quite a bit different, right? It's the difference between someone getting up and just generically thanking God when they win an award versus thanking Jesus for his sacrifice on the cross so that we could be made righteous before an all righteous and all powerful God, right? But there's some other very, very important things to note in this very, very short clip. First, he said, I feel at home in the Christian ethos. So ethos is basically just a set of, you know, ideals and beliefs that characterize a particular community or a particular ideology. And so Dawkins admits that he likes the benefits of Christian culture, which all of us do that live in the West. We all love the benefits of it, whether we take it seriously or not. He feels comfortable and protected inside of the bosom of the Christian ethos. Essentially, he wants creation without the creator. Because Christianity and a society that is built on a Judeo-Christian ethic is a great society to live in. It's a capitalist society. It's a society that values human beings, not unborn human beings. We couldn't possibly go that far. But in general, we value human beings, and we think that inherently individual human beings have rights. Where do you think that comes from? Doesn't come from Darwin. Certainly doesn't come from any type of evolutionary or humanistic point of view. Also, he said that he's happy with the fact that the number of British people professing faith in God is going down. He loves that, right? That's partially due to him, right? But he still laments that there are downstream consequences to that.
and some downstream consequences like, you know, cathedrals and churches might go away. You know, he talked about, oh, I love, you know, hymns and Christmas carols and things like that. But it's like, have you ever taken the time to look at the lyrics of those songs? Who do you think they're singing about? The son of the God that you think doesn't exist, right? He also said that it would be dreadful, his word, if the UK substituted an alternative religion for Christianity. Again, the UK is not a Christian nation, right? But he said it would be dreadful if they substituted another religion for Christianity. And specifically, obviously, he's talking about Islam. There was the mention of, you know, churches closing down, but there's, you know, over 6,000 mosques that are currently under construction in Europe and many, many more planned. You don't think that's going to have an impact on the greater culture of those individual countries inside of the United or inside of Europe, inside of, you know, UN countries, certainly inside the UK. And then there was a crazy quote. He said this, if I had to choose between Christianity and Islam, I would choose Christianity over Islam every single time. Which, to anyone with a functioning brain, you would agree with that. There's a reason why people don't want to live in Muslim countries. All these Muslims over here that we call moderate Muslims, right? These cultural Muslims, they don't want to live in Afghanistan. They don't want to live in Yemen. They don't want to live in any of these countries where the dominant religion is Islam. Why? Why? And that's the question I would beg to Richard Dawkins. Is why would you choose Christianity over Islam? Because he calls Christianity a fundamentally decent religion in a way that he thinks Islam is not. And the examples he uses are treatment of women and treatment of gays, which obviously in most Muslim countries, women can't even drive. They essentially don't have rights. Some of them can't leave their homes. They can't be in a car with someone that's not their husband or their father or something like that. And if you're gay, like this Queers for Palestine stuff, okay, go over there and wave that sign, and you will be flying off the top of a building before lunchtime. And not on your own accord, you will be tossed off. But then Dawkins tries to split the baby here by saying something along the lines of, oh, but, you know, I don't mean individual Muslims. I just mean the Quran and the Hadith. As if the Quran and the Hadith have the qualities of a living, sentient human being. Who propagates the ideals that are expressed in the Quran and the Hadith? People, right? Individual Muslims. I mean, it's incoherent nonsense to try to separate Muslims, practicing Muslims from the Quran and the Hadith. Again, I always talk about it's not radical Islam that performs these terrorist atrocities. It's not radical Islam. It's fundamentalist Islam. It's exactly what the so-called prophet Muhammad would want these people to do. To rape, murder, and genocide people that aren't Muslims. I've talked about that ad nauseum, so I'm not going to repeat it here. So when we look at a story like this, because I'm sure most of you have kind of seen something about this, what should we think about this kind of a story? So a few thoughts. Anytime a prominent figure publicly proclaims that Christianity is preferable to Islam, that's a good thing. Whether they believe it or not, it's like, okay, thank you for just being reasonable. Again, you don't have a society that values the individual human in an Islamic context like you do in a Christian context. It's just simply not the same. So he is a prominent figure that doesn't believe in Christianity nor Islam, but he obviously understands that there's a fundamental difference between the two. Another thought is that we should constantly remind ourselves that Islam is a religion that leads to murder, rape, genocide, and billions of people spending their eternities in hell. Now, that is not me telling you, you should hate your Muslim brother, right? You should hate all Muslims. Of course not. You should share Christ with them. Because if they are a moderate Muslim, they're not following the words of the Quran. They're not following the dictates of the ninth surah closely. They may never have even read it before. Maybe they're just Muslim by birth. Their parents were Muslim, so they just identify as Muslim. They would check the Muslim box if they were given a bunch of options, right? But if they actually follow the dictates of the Quran and the Hadith, they will be much different than the neighbor that you know, than the brother that you know. And regardless of if they are a moderate Muslim that doesn't read the Quran or the Hadith, or whether they are the leader of Boko Haram or Hamas or ISIS or something like that, they all need the exact same thing. They need the person of Jesus. So share Jesus with them. And the Holy Spirit and Jesus are working even regardless of whether or not you say what you need to say, because we've seen tons of stories of people in the Middle East where Jesus is coming to them in their dreams saying, believe in me, put your faith in me. So that doesn't absolve you of your responsibility to share the gospel with them, but just know that there's plenty of work being done even outside of you. Another thought here, just a couple more. We must disabuse the people around us of the ideology that you can somehow ultimately enjoy creation without the creator. Because you will have friends that are like, oh, you know, I'm not religious, but I am spiritual. And their spiritualness typically ties to something in nature. So yeah, they don't really believe in your, you know, your khakis and your Bibles and you're going to church on Sundays and any of that type of stuff, but they believe in nature. They go out on a hike and they're right by a stream and they see a deer jump in the distance and they look up at the mountains and, oh, look, the sunset, and they're worshiping creation, which is what we were built to do, by the way. Why would we be given the ability to observe beauty and to categorize it as beautiful without the creator that put that in us to begin with? You think a beaver stops and looks at his work and goes, man, that's quite the dam. Look at me. I'm amazing. Do you think an eagle as it's flying is like, oh, this is amazing. Look how great this is. Like, I'm making up way better time than if I had legs. Like, that's not what they're thinking. And I guess eagles do have legs, but you get the point. They're not flying thinking this is amazing. They're just flying. They're just biological beings that are firing off, but we have been given sentience in a different way, where we can look upon the creation that the Creator has given us, and we are able to see it for the beauty that it is, and to also experience great gratitude. And so we have to let the people around us know, like, look, you have to take the Creator with creation. You don't get to split them off. And the last thing here, and this is, you know, obvious, we need to keep praying for Dawkins. We need to keep praying that he will put his faith in Christ. Again, we don't need to put all of our eggs in the Dawkins basket or the Jordan Peterson basket or the Joe Rogan basket or the whoever your favorite person is basket that you want to be, you know, as good of a Christian just like you and have the same theology and eschatology and soteriology, blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff. We don't need that. But if one of the four horsemen turns to Christ, it certainly will have an impact. And think about the perspective of someone like that that has spent decades ardently fighting against the ideology that he would then actually be espousing and sharing, which would be the good news of the gospel. It'd be quite the turn. Hey guys, real quick. Here recently, one of my family members was telling me about how they partnered with another family and they bought some beef from this local cattle producer. And when they got the beef, it was unbelievably terrible. And I can tell you this from experience because they made me some beef ribs from that animal and they were terrible. And they even gave me some steaks and some ground and it was basically inedible. I couldn't believe how bad it was. And they ended up finding out that the person killed an old bull or something like that. And just the meat was old and tough and awful. And that's just what happens when you don't have a quality cattle operation that you can trust to give you a quality beef product on the back end. And that's, guys, why I want to introduce you to the official beef delivery partner of Undaunted Life, my friends at Primal Beef. So Primal Beef is a cattle operation owned and operated by Sean Glass. He's a retired Navy SEAL that has partnered with Jocko Willing to launch Primal Beef. So what makes Primal Beef different from some of these other cattle operations where you're going to end up getting bad beef? This operation is all American Black Angus cattle. The beef comes from one farm, and that's in Virginia Shenandoah Valley. The beef is all natural, no hormones ever, no mRNA ever, no vaccines ever. And after slaughter, this is a big deal. The beef is dry aged, and then it's hand cut by artisan butchers and then flash frozen to ensure that it maintains tenderness, marbling, and flavor. And here's another great thing about it. For every box sold, Primal Beef donates meat directly to a member of America's Special Operations Forces through the C4 Foundation. So you can take pride knowing that your purchase will help to put literal food on the table for America's finest warriors. If you're not salivating yet, it's probably because you're a communist. Don't be a communist. Try Primal Beef out today by going to www.primalbeef.com. That's primalbeef.com. Use the promo code Kyle, that's my first name, to get 10% off of your order. The great thing about that promo code is you can stack that on other deals as well and get all this money off. Again, that's primalbeef.com, promo code Kyle, that's K-Y-L-E, to get 10% off your order. All right, let's get into the first quick hitter today. The Biden administration nuking Title IX, making gender identity the same as sex. So this is according to Riley Gaines on Twitter. So Riley Gaines was a former University of Kentucky swimmer that got beat by Leah Thomas, otherwise known as a dude, right? And, you know, she's basically made a career. She has over a million followers on Twitter right now just because she's pointing out basic biological fact. But she actually tweeted this out on the 19th to give us an idea as to what was going on. The Biden administration has just officially abolished Title IX as we knew it. Now, sex equals gender identity. In a nutshell, the new rewrite means men can take academic and athletic scholarships from women. Men will have full access to bathrooms, locker rooms, etc. Men could be housed in dorm rooms with women, and students and faculty must compel their speech by requiring the use of preferred pronouns. If the guidelines above are ignored or even questioned, then you can be charged with harassment. And so those details were released on a Friday afternoon. Now, as any of us know, with any type of media training, if you don't want something to be in the news cycle, you release it late on Friday, right? Friday afternoon, basically you miss it on the news cycle through the weekend, and by Monday, no one talks about it anymore. Now, there was no congressional approval for this. Obviously, this was just Joe Biden, you know, basically waving his pen and saying this is what's going to happen. And a couple of other changes that weren't elucidated there by Riley Gaines, who will likely be coming on the show here soon to talk way more about this. But some other things is that these kangaroo courts will be back on college campuses if this goes through. Okay, so what I mean by kangaroo courts is before Trump nuked the old, you know, Obama Title IX changes, if a girl alleged sexual assault or rape on a college campus, that charge would be adjudicated by someone that works on campus. Not the police, not a detective, not a jury of your peers, not a judge, but some person that works in some office at a university. And so imagine that. And here's the other thing. Is the person that was accused of doing the sexual assault, they would have no due process. They cannot face their accuser, and they cannot present their case. They would basically take the accuser's account and then make a determination as to whether or not the student could stay on campus. And there are men's lives that have been destroyed by evil, satanic women that have claimed sexual assault, and they just made it up. Because maybe it was a bad date, or maybe they broke up, or maybe they're just like, I would like to destroy a man today. Does that make me a misogynist for pointing that out, or does it make it literal? Because these women would lie. They would lie and say they were sexually assaulted and raped, and then guys would be kicked out of school, and they would get an X on their transcript, which basically, if they apply somewhere else, they would have to check on as to why that X is on their transcript, and so it affects their ability to get anywhere and finish their degree. Some of them lost scholarships. They lost, you know, maybe they had athletic rides or they had academic rides. They would lose those things because of some stupid woman that just decided, well, I'm in control and I'm in power. And that's what the Title IX change, what this could be added back in. This is where these young men will be exposed. Now, I will tell you, young men, if you don't sleep around in college, you're probably not going to run into one of these kangaroo courts. But if you do the college thing, which is getting drunk, not going to class, and sleeping with random hoes, one of those random hoes might later regret the fact that she was kind of whorish in her behavior, and the way she's going to take it out on humanity is by screwing you over, right? So that could be coming back with all this Title IX stuff. Another thing is all K-12 schools, all of them that are taking federal funding, they will have to abide by this. That could possibly include your private school that you send your kids to, guys. So you need to check. Because basically all public schools take federal funding, but there are private schools, Christian schools, parochial schools that somehow take federal funding as well. And if you take the federal funding, you will have to abide by this. So all the trans nonsense, all the non-binary nonsense, all the pronoun stuff, you're going to have to do that at your kid's school. And if you have a kid going to a Christian school and they accept federal funding, you have to demand with the board or with the people that lead that entire school to get rid of the federal funding. Hey, just increase tuition on every single family across the board, because that is way better of a scenario than having to deal with all of this nonsense. Now, this will assuredly be challenged in the courts, so we'll just have to see where it goes, but I'm going to go to my big takeaway here. Somehow, women will still vote Democrat. It is absolutely incredible. The Democratic Party is signaling to women and girls that they don't care about you. They don't care about women's rights. Now, when it comes to trans, I talked about this on a recent episode where there's the hierarchy, right? The victim Olympics. And women used to be at the top of the victim Olympics. And then intersectionality was invented. And it's like, oh, well, you're a black woman or a Latinx woman. or, you know, a Native American woman, right? And then that was higher. And then if you were a lesbian Native American woman, that was another level of intersection, which kind of moved you up the victim Olympics hierarchy, right? But nobody is higher than trans right now in terms of the left. Nobody is higher. Because again, they are giving rights to men to the detriment of women. And I don't mean just the detriment of they're losing some swimming competitions, which is bad enough. You work your whole life to win a race, and then it's won by a dude, and the dude gets the trophy. Like, that's not right. That's not fair. But there are men that are in women's spaces, men in women's bathrooms, men that are showing their genitalia to women, and it's basically like, ah, just kidding, I'm trans, as they're watching them undress, right? But women all over the place are going to be voting for Joe Biden in November. And not just women, right? I don't want to, you know, talk about them as like one pejorative group. Women that love leftism, liberal women, college educated, suburban women are going to be tripping over themselves to vote for Joe Biden. But they're signaling to you they don't care about you. That all those third and fourth wave feminism ideals that you hold to and that you so fervently believe in that you never actually thought through, but that you fervently believe in your heart to be true and the best way of operating, they just nuked it. And you don't care. And they know you don't care. That's why they're doing this. They're doing this to get their agenda across because they know you will come home in November, that you will vote for every candidate, blue, no matter who. So get what you paid for. All right, next one here, a leftist Christian activist supporting the anti-Semitic displays at Columbia University. So as we've seen for the last couple of weeks, major universities here in the United States, NYU, Columbia, you know, UT Austin, different places, they're doing these anti-Israel displays, these anti-Semitic displays. And it's especially true at Ivy League universities that there's this kind of growing anti-Semitism. And we've seen people basically take over and they're setting up camps. And obviously there are like professional agitators that are part of these crowds. And university presidents are being asked to step down, and there's all this craziness going on with people being arrested and people finding out like, oh, this is funded by the Soroses. And why do all these tents match? That's kind of weird. Like, have you ever seen a campground where all the tents match? Oh, it's because there are nefarious forces out there buying up all the tents and like making sure these people can stay there. These universities are doing nothing to protect the identities nor the safety of the Jewish students on campus. These Jewish students are being targeted. They're being spat on. They're being assaulted in some cases. You're having Jewish university staff and professors not able to go to their classes. The universities, as opposed to just arresting these fools and keeping them in prison, they're basically kowtowing to them saying, hey, we're just going to go to digital for the last couple of weeks of school, you know, just do digital because we can't guarantee your safety on these campuses, right? And leftism is obviously feeding this. This is basically an ideology that has to be anti-something. You know, it's getting warmer around the country right now, so we're starting to get into riot season, especially since we've got the November elections coming up. We need some good riots. You know, all the mainstream media, they are just like hoping and praying every single day, praying in front of this picture of St. George Floyd, hoping that another unarmed black man is killed by a white police officer. And hopefully that white police officer has used a racial slur or liked a racist meme at some point in their life. They are just hoping to goodness for that, because all of that is good for Democrats, right? It's all feeding into the same thing. But the thing with leftism is there are a bunch of ideas that come into the exact same menu. There are people that all do essentially the same thing if they have the brain disease of leftism. And so there's a leftist that came up here again recently. He's an anti-gun pacifist Christian activist named Shane Claiborne. And so Shane Claiborne is a guy that I was actually put opposite on a debate on the Unbelievable podcast a couple of years ago. Justin Brierley would hit me up. He's like, hey, we got a guy. He's an anti-gun Christian activist, and he wants to do a debate. And I know you're a Second Amendment guy. Like, you want to do this debate? And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, the Second Amendment and guns is like not even in the top 10 of stuff that I talk about most often. But sure, I'll go beat up some anti-gun guy for a little bit. And that's exactly what happened. If this debate had been longer, I would have been able to drag him into deep water slowly and then slowly drown him and make him rethink all of his life decisions. But I kind of just bludgeoned him from the very beginning. He had a bunch of vapid opinions on things. He wouldn't really stick to the topic. And I'll put the debate in the show notes so that you can watch it for yourself. But this is a guy that hasn't spent a whole lot of time thinking through things, but he will hop on every left-wing thing and he will like give his support for it. And he did that again. So on the 20th of April, he actually tweeted this. I am deeply moved by the passion and the courage of students at Columbia University and students around the country. You are showing the world what love and solidarity look like, even in the face of militarized police and the shameful intimidation of school administration. You are an inspiration. Keep it up. Courage is contagious. So, if you're keeping score, Shane Claiborne thinks it is courageous if you stand in the middle of campus, if you trespass in certain areas, if you spit on Jewish students, if you speak truth to power, right? That's what love and solidarity looks like, y'all. Didn't you know this? And of course, he's like, oh, the militarized police. How dare these police officers go in there with riot shields and arrest people that are breaking the law? Gosh, what shameful behavior. And he's talking about the intimidation of school administrations. Do you think the students at NYU and Columbia are intimidated by the school administration? They're doing that because they know the school administration agrees with them. Okay, so that's Shane Claiborne. So I'm going to go to my big takeaway here. Leftism seems to be a brain disease that does not allow for dissent. And in the case of someone like Shane Claiborne, the thing that Shane Claiborne is most anti about, above all things that you could be anti about, he's anti-gun. Anti-gun is like his thing. So he will actually go around the country doing these presentations to literally tens of people, and he will have law-abiding Christians come up on stage with their firearms, and they will destroy the firearms in front of them, and they all cheer. And all the criminals are literally waiting outside looking at all the, oh, guy in the blue shirt, he just destroyed his firearm. Let's go rob that guy, or let's follow him home because we know he can't protect himself anymore. But a guy like Shane Claiborne, he's not just anti-gun. He's also anti-Israel, pro-choice, pro-open borders, pro-defunding the police, pro-transing the kids, pro-drag queen story hour, pro-student loan forgiveness, and, you know, just on and on and on. Like, just think about it this way. Do you know anybody that is anti-gun, anti-Israel, pro-open borders, pro-defunding the police, pro-transing the kids, pro-drag queen story hour, pro-student loan forgiveness, and also pro-life? That person doesn't exist. Because if someone were to go outside of the leftist prescriptions for how we are to think about everything, they would be expelled. There is no dissent. You have to believe everything that they believe. You have to check all the boxes. And then you have these go along to get along, I want to be known for what I'm for, not what I'm against, people like Shane Claiborne that have never seen a leftist cause that they didn't think Jesus would stand up for. These are the people that think Jesus literally walked around and never made anyone angry. That Jesus would never do something like overturn a table in a premeditated act of violence. But again, with people like Shane Claiborne, and there are plenty of people like him, you have to be very, very careful listening to anything that they say, because these are people that are typically not people of the book. If they do quote scripture, they're doing it completely out of context. They will pluck a piece of scripture out that only that part of that scripture does it apply to what they already had as a preconceived notion or philosophy, and they will throw that in your face. But when you start to peel back the layers of the onion of that particular scripture, who is this to? What's the context that it's in, and what people group is it affecting most directly, you realize it doesn't really go along with anything that they said. So we always got to be careful with that. All right, next quick hitter here. The Biden administration quietly making it harder for the swamp to be drained. So this was according to the U.S. Office of Personnel Management from the 4th of April. The U.S. Office of Personnel Management, OPM, today announced a final rule that clarifies and reinforces longstanding protections and merit systems principles for career civil servants. Career federal employees deliver critical services for Americans in every community, said OPM Director Karan Ahuja. We'll just say Karan. That's K-I-R-A-N, by the way. Okay, there you go. This final rule honors our 2.2 million career civil servants, helping ensure that people are hired and fired based on merit and that they can carry out their duties based on their expertise and not political loyalty. The Biden-Harris administration is deeply committed to the federal workforce, as these professionals are vital to our national security, our health, and our economic prosperity, and much more. So I'm going to go right to my big takeaway on this one, because this might seem like a pretty obscure story. Let me translate this for you, and I'll put the entire thing that the OPM put out there in the show notes. You can read it for yourself. But let me translate this. The Biden administration is making sure to make it harder to fire unelected government bureaucrats and other useless employees just in case they don't win in November. They're doing this preemptively because one of the things the Biden administration has done is to make the hiring numbers look better. They're creating a bunch of government part-time jobs to increase the stats. The employment stats. So there's all these part-time workers basically not doing anything, wasting American taxpayer dollars, And that's been part of the plan to make the Biden administration not look so crappy. So that's part of the plan. But also, these deeply entrenched, unelected government bureaucrats that hate the right, that want to militarize against the right, essentially, they want to make sure that they can stay in place. Because people like Trump have signaled, if I get back in the White House, I'm going to drain the swamp. Okay? Maybe. But what I do know is that Trump already said he was going to do that once, and he didn't. I know all the MAGA people think I just hate on Trump, but let's just be honest. He's elected in 2016. He goes into office January of 2017, right? And he's in office for 4 years, and the administrative state got bigger. That's not draining the swamp. The only thing that seemed to get drained was the people that worked for him constantly. There was just like a revolving door of people that worked in his administration. But the swamp didn't get drained. So there's a couple ways you could take that. Either one, Trump didn't mean it. He never intended to drain the swamp, or he got distracted, one of the two. Or the swamp can't be drained. Because what this new OPM thing is going to do is it's going to make it harder to fire certain people, and it'll give those people that have been fired for being worthless or being in departments that don't matter, it'll give them the ability to sue. And when there's any type of litigation that's a part of a process like this, it'll stop people from making the correct action. So we have Milei in Argentina that went through and cut out entire government entities and like all these different offices and just got rid of them. They don't have laws like this on the books down there in Argentina. So he was able to just literally slash entire departments and say, well, you don't exist anymore. We're not giving any money to this nonsense. Can't really do that in America. It's because of stuff like this. All right, last quick hitter here. An 18-year-old Idaho man being arrested before carrying out a suicide attack on Christian churches in order to support ISIS. So this is from the 9th of April, and this is according to the AP. An 18-year-old man planned to attack churches in northern Idaho using a metal pipe, butane fuel, a machete, and if he could get them, his father's guns, according to federal prosecutors who charged him with attempting to provide material support to the Islamic State group. Authorities said Alexander Scott Mercurio adopted the Muslim faith against the Christian's parents' wishes and was in contact with the FBI informants posing as Islamic State group supporters. Mercurio was arrested Saturday, the day before investigators believe he planned to carry out the attack. After attacking the church, Mercurio told the informant he planned to attack others in town, as many as 21, before being killed in an act of martyrdom, according to the statement. So, this is one of those weird stories. I don't really want to get into this side of it, but where the FBI is in on a plan to kill Americans. Now, you can look at it just like what they did with what Clock Boy back in the day, where, you know, there's some other different things where, you know, CIA or FBI will pose as militants and they will get people to believe in their cause and then they'll arrest them right before they do the thing. The thing is you're rolling the dice when you do something like that, because they arrested him the day before they thought he was going to carry out the attack. But what if he had decided to do it a week earlier? Now, I don't know anything about the informants and the conversations, obviously, that were had. All that's never going to be released to the public. But man, you're really rolling the dice when you do stuff like that. But it is a good thing to get a guy like this off the streets. Also, isn't it weird? This guy converts to the supposed religion of peace and immediately tries to mass murder Christians. Isn't that so interesting? Again, I have been told that I'm wrong about Islam. That Islam is a religion of peace, that, you know, it's Boko Haram and it's Al Qaeda and it's the Taliban and Hamas, like they're doing it wrong. But the moderate Muslim brother down the street, that's the guy that's doing it right. But this guy from Idaho converts to Islam and immediately thinks, I need to kill as many people as possible. Who specifically? Not other Muslims, Christians, who Muslims think are apostates, infidels, that deserve nothing other than the sharp end of a sword. And he was going to carry out this mass attack, right? So I'm going to go right to my big takeaway on this one. Are you prepared to end a thread at your church? I talked about this a lot recently. Talked about how the FBI has been signaling for months now that a terrorist attack carried out by Muslim fundamentalists is imminent inside the United States, which is obviously true. Southern border is wide open. We have terrorists literally streaming across the border, and they're going to their different hubs, and there are cells that are going to be activated at some point, and there will be a lot of Americans that will be killed. There will be a lot of blood that is going to be spread and spilled in the United States partially because of our southern border being so porous. And it would make sense that they would want to go to mass gatherings of apostates and infidels, kind of like your church. So I talked about on Easter this year, I did a little walk around my church during the worship set to see if I saw anything that was out of sorts. Now, my church, we do have security in place. Okay, so there are, you know, police officers there that are in uniform. There are a lot of people that I know that are like me that carry, but those aren't impenetrable things. If somebody wanted to target our church, I'm sure that they could, but it's not going to be as impregnable as, you know, a fortress would be. But the thing that I don't understand with people is they think that there's some sort of a force field around their church. Church administrators are like, we don't need security. We have God. And I don't mean to belittle relying on God. Certainly not. As a Christian, I think that would be foolish and heretical. But there are satanic people. There are people that are driven by demons that would love for you to think that way. Because if that were true, then there would never be a church where there would be a mass shooting. And there certainly have been mass shootings at plenty of churches. And unfortunately, the number of churches that will experience something like that is only going to go up. We don't see that going away until rapture, right? Right, until Jesus comes back, we're not going to see something like that. And so for you, you have to think about it this way. Let's say you're at a church that has somewhere between no security presence at all, and they've got like super security presence. The security is not always going to be in front of you, in between you and the wolf. And so if you are in front of the wolf, you have to be thinking not only what could potentially happen to you, but what's going to potentially happening to the people behind you. And if you've heard me talk like this before, I'm not trying to be unique. This is a drum that I'm just going to keep beating. Those of you that don't like firearms, or you're a pussy and your wife basically tells you whether or not that you can have a firearm or carry one, you need to be thinking through that a little bit. Because do you really want your only defense against a potential wolf, a potential perpetrator, to be your little bitty wrists and your soft hands? Because I'm going to tell you right now, a bullet's going to be a whole lot better for them than your wrists and hands are going to be for you. And you will fall to the level of your training. You don't know how to fight anyway. Why would you not want a force multiplier on you? Oh, but that's crazy, and I don't want to do that, and I don't want my kids to think that I'm scared. No, you want your kids to know that dad's prepared. That dad hopes to never use this tool for what it was intended to be used for. Every day that I carry, I'm hoping that I get to just take my pistol back out and put it back in its place. I don't want to fire that today unless I'm at the range. I certainly don't want to fire it at church, because if I'm pulling my pistol at church and firing it, it means something has gone horribly wrong and people are already probably dead if I have to get to that point. But you need to be prepared. And I don't just mean physically. Yes. You need to be carrying in a way that's comfortable for you. You need to practice with pulling that firearm out of concealment and getting it on the target as quickly as possible. Yes, you need to have some muscle memory. Yes, you need to do some live firing at the range, and you need to do dry firing. Yes, you need to be prepared physically to where if something goes wrong with your firearm, that you have a secondary weapon. Maybe it's a fixed blade. Maybe it's jujitsu. Maybe you're using your hands and feet. Maybe it's Muay Thai. Maybe it's something like that. You got to be prepared to fight in all those situations. But you also need to be prepared mentally. Because all that training's fine. Live firing, dry firing, rolling, boxing, all that stuff's fine. But if you have not mentally come to the place where you would be okay with using your physicality to end the life of someone else that is planning to hurt innocent image bearers of God, then all that training's kind of out the window. Because you don't want to wait to make that decision in the heat of the moment. Right? You don't want to be in the heat of the moment and be thinking to yourself, okay, am I actually going to pull this pistol and shoot somebody with it? Oh my gosh, you might be dead by the time you get done thinking about it. You want to put yourself in those scenarios. I told you, I'm kind of crazy. Like if I don't fall asleep immediately, I'm running scenarios in my head of what if someone breaks in this part of the house, or as you're, you know, walking through a mall or something like that, you're making sure you know where the exits are. You're kind of looking around, seeing if anybody looks suspicious or weird. You have to put yourself in those scenarios. And again, when you're in the heat of the moment, you can't be the guy like, oh man, vacillating back and forth and I'm not really sure. You need to make the decision. I am willing to use this firearm to end the life of someone that's trying to end innocent lives. I'm going to be the person that tries to stop that. Whether you're successful or not, that comes down to the situation, right? But you have to make that decision. Hey, If I'm in a place where I'm unarmed for whatever reason, I am willing to use my hands and feet and everything else around me to try and take out the person that is trying to take out innocent image bearers of Christ or innocent image bearers of God. I'm going to be the guy that stands in the gap. I'm not going to be the guy hiding. I'm going to be the guy that's going to risk my life and my personal safety to protect and save others. Are you prepared to end a threat at your church? If you were in the crosshairs of this Mercurio guy in Northern Idaho, would you have been ready? He's coming in potentially with firearms, with metal pipes and butane fuel and machetes and different things like that. Are you ready? Again, I keep repeating it because I want you to be hearing this in your own head. Because some of the people in my audience, you tuned me out 5 minutes ago because you're like, yeah, the answer is yes, Kyle. Why do you keep asking me? But just be patient with me because there's a huge, hopefully not, but there is a certain percentage of my audience that has never thought through this before. They just blindly walk through their entire world thinking, ah, it won't happen to me. It's not going to happen to my church. It can't happen to my church. Don't you think that's what all these people think when it does happen at their church? They're in complete shock because they don't know how this could have ever happened. It could happen. I hope it doesn't, but we have to be prepared. All right, guys, before I let you go, we are going to do a quick resilience boost. At Undaunted Life, our mission is equipping men to push back darkness with content that forges spiritual, mental, and physical resilience. In the show notes, I got links to our donation page. Again, guys, if you want us to keep putting out content like this, you got to make sure that you hop on board, become a monthly donor, and then I've got all the links to everything I talked about in the main story and the quick hitters. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. Wherever you're listening to this, please subscribe, rate, and leave us a positive 5-star review. If you want me to come speak live at your event or on your podcast, just shoot me an email to info@undaunted.life. That's info@undaunted.life. Follow us on Instagram and like us on Facebook and check out our website for everything else, including how to donate to keep more content like this coming your way. Just go to www.undaunted.life. And also, we want to thank the band Holy Name for allowing us to use their music for our content. The music on this podcast is their song Perpetua, which is off their self-titled debut album on Face Down Records. The links are in the description. I'm your host, Kyle Thompson. Remember, keep pushing back darkness, keep forging spiritual, mental, and physical resilience, keep seeking the Lion of Judah.